Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
Today, we will hear from two individuals leading the way in safeguarding the mental health of physicians. By flagging barriers to physicians seeking mental health assistance and removing these barriers, my guests make the profession safer for both provider and patient. It is with respect and appreciation that Sound Practice welcomes Tim Fisher and Corey Feist. My guests today are Corey Feist and Tim Fisher. Mr. Feist is the founder and CEO of the Dr. Lorna Breen Foundation. Mr. Fisher is the president of Jackson Coker. Corey Feist, Tim Fisher, welcome to Sound Practice.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's our pleasure. Corey, can you tell me about the Dr. Lorna Breen Foundation and the work that it does?
Sure. Dr. Lorna Breen Heroes Foundation was created in the summer of 2020 following the publicity of the passing of my sister-in-law, Dr. Lorna Breen, who was an emergency medicine physician and the medical director of the New York Presbyterian Allen Hospital. Lorna was also a member of the Columbia faculty. And the response by the workforce was so strong, identifying this hidden in plain sight issue around concerns around their own mental health and well-being, that we felt it was important to honor Lorna's legacy, but more importantly, step into this arena to try to make the workplace a better operational environment for healthcare workers, as well as an environment where their mental health and well-being is thought about as much as we think about the well-being of patients. And so our foundation has really been focused on the entire healthcare workforce and really focusing specifically on improving their well-being, decreasing their burnout, improving their mental health, and envisions a world where seeking mental health treatment, particularly for healthcare professionals, is viewed as a sign of strength.
Something that we should all be supportive of. Tim, you're with Jackson Coker. Can you tell me a little bit about your organization?
Sure. So Jackson & Coker is a firm that focuses on locum tenens, which is a term that probably 20 years ago meant something a little differently than it is today. But we will partner with about 2,500 physicians this year in 2024. And some of them do locum tenens full time. Some of them do it on the side. They're employed elsewhere. But we basically try to connect physicians and advanced practitioners with communities around the U.S. To transform lives. That's our mission statement. So that's it in a nutshell.
Excellent. Well, your organization, Jackson & Coker, has formed up a partnership with the Dr. Lorna Breen Foundation. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how it came to be?
Well, Corey tells the story better than I do, but basically, Corey and I were on a call similar to this, and I'm pretty embarrassed to admit that I didn't really realize, I've been in healthcare for a good number of years, and I didn't really realize that healthcare providers in general, not just physicians, were hurting in our country the way that they are. He brought that to my attention, and we weren't doing a good enough job here at Jackson & Coker to ensure that we were part of the solution. And that led to us changing really how we do business here. And we're continuing to do that. I don't think you ever get to the point where, we're done. But it just changed the mindset of our organization on how we interact with physicians, advanced practitioners, our clients, which are the hospitals, healthcare organizations around the country, and how we do business.
Excellent. Corey, I'm interested to know more about the all-in well-being first for healthcare. I know that your foundation has some partnerships, and maybe you could tell me about that program.
Absolutely. One of the very first things that we did when we started our work was to recognize our limitations as a small startup and partner with organizations. And as someone who came from within the house of medicine, we know that healthcare is a team sport. So we wanted that partnership to be incredibly inclusive and not just focused on one subset of the healthcare workforce. So we created a coalition called All In Wellbeing First for Healthcare with some traditional and atraditional players. Traditional players, the Harvard School of Public Health, Johnson & Johnson. Atraditional players, the Creative Artists Agency, Thrive Global, which is Arianna Huffington's mental health company. And then we expanded to include professional organizations, American Hospital Association, American Medical Association, American Nursing Association, and the Schwartz Center for Compassionate Healthcare, IHI, all many of the organizations that you would traditionally think of as the leading associations and professional associations. And what I would just share with you about the work is we've got two very focused goals. The first is to help scale well-being solutions as a coalition. Now, we've done that through certain programs, which I can explain. And then the second thing that we're really focusing on is to make sure that the barriers to mental health access for healthcare workers, and particularly the institutionalized stigma around getting mental health treatment, are removed so that the healthcare workers can simply get the same treatment they prescribe to their patients and take care of themselves so they can do the best job taking care of patients. So those are our two goals as a coalition. Very briefly, kind of in reverse order, one of the very first things we did with that second goal was to identify that one of the key drivers to suicide among health workers is their concerns around the ramifications of what getting mental health treatment will do to their professional license, their hospital credentials, their insurance credentials, et cetera. And so working with partners like the American Medical Association and others, we developed a toolkit where we give organizations at no cost the ability to audit the questions that they're asking of their applicants, change them where necessary, and then importantly, be recognized by our foundation through a badge, which we call the Champions Challenge Badge. And we're doing that for a couple reasons. One is we want to prevent as much suicide as possible. We want to improve and increase the access of healthcare professionals getting mental health treatment. But we also feel like it's incredibly important that the healthcare workers themselves simply know the rules around this stuff. And what I'll tell you is, in my sister-in-law's example, is unfortunately not atypical, where someone who was licensed in a state working in a singular hospital system her whole career had a set of assumptions around the ramifications, I should say, the negative consequences on her ability to work as a doctor that were not correct. They were not correct. There were a series of assumptions that she was making. We believe, and in speaking with other families of those who've been lost to suicide, we all believe that simply letting the workforce and the loved ones, frankly, who support those workforce, know what the rules are. Are there actual consequences to getting mental health treatment, as an example, are critical in that time of need? You don't need it until you need it. And then when you need it, you might be in a crisis like my sister-in-law found herself in. As a family, it would have been incredibly helpful for us, as an example, to know what are the rules in New York State. Well, this badge program that we've created through the All In Coalition allows people to make a very quick determination. Is my state one that's been recognized by the Breen Foundation and the All In Coalition for their work or not? And we can talk more about other programs that we've got, but this is what we do, and we do this together. And by doing it together, we are elevating all the boats and also bringing in the voices, many of whom are the smaller organizations, and really elevating everybody together. And it's been a very successful coalition. And we would invite anyone of your listeners to go to allinforhealthcare.org, where you can learn more about the All In Coalition.
Well, it's certainly extraordinarily important work. Tim, Jackson and Coker was named as a well-being first champion by All In Well-Being First for Healthcare Coalition. So off the bat, congratulations.
Thank you.
Can you tell me what the process was, what steps you had to take to receive this designation?
Well, I think Corey just touched on it at a high level. Basically, it's looking at how when somebody applies to partner with us, what questions we're asking in the application process. Are there intrusive questions? Are there questions that will contribute to the stigma that Corey just talked about, where healthcare workers are afraid to raise their hand and say they need help? As an industry, and we just have to do better with making sure that people are comfortable going through the process, that they don't feel that stigma. So we had to go through the great thing about partnering with the Dr. Lorna Breen Heroes Foundation is they have a process and they make it very simple for people to understand, like us at Jackson and Coker, and they walk you through it. And you don't have to have all the answers. You just have to care.
Well, that is, that's very nicely said. Tim, I'm interested. Jackson and Coker certainly works with large numbers of physicians. I think you mentioned that you'll have worked with 2,500 or more in calendar year 2024. Does your organization see mental health issues that vary by age or by specialty of provider or geographically? I'm just trying to get a feel. Is it uniformly the same across our country, despite where a professional, whether he or she is, or are there some unique mental health issues for certain segments of the healthcare community?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think I'm always careful to generalize at a high level. So I would say overall, we have a problem. And it doesn't matter if you live in small town Illinois where I grew up or New York City, healthcare workers overall are feeling, they're struggling with their well-being. They're struggling with burnout. They're struggling with feeling that they're important in this world that we live in. And they're feeling not as appreciated as they should. So I think, you probably have people who are doing great in all those areas in New York City, and you probably have them in rural America. But we also have a lot of people that are struggling. So it's really, it's tough to put it in a box. But we have an issue in this country and probably in the world.
And if I could just add something to Tim's answer, a year ago, October, so October of 2023, just down the road from where Tim is in Georgia, the CDC published their monthly vital signs report. And in that report, it identified that the mental health among healthcare workers in the United States was worse than any other job sector in the United States. And so I think it is, just to underscore Tim's point, this isn't just anecdote. This is from the CDC saying there's a mental health crisis among healthcare professionals. So I wanted just to put an exclamation point on what Tim said. The other piece, in terms of just the irony of us asking these kind of inappropriate questions that prevent mental health treatment, is that the number one chronic condition across the globe experienced by people is depression. And so when you realize that, and I, as a lawyer, I'm looking at, you've got a lot of smart looking books behind you. As a lawyer to a lawyer here, I can tell you, I didn't know that. I also didn't know that these questions, as someone who actually sat on the credentials committee of our hospital for a long time, I didn't go and look at all these questions in that level of detail to think about it from the perspective of, well, we know what these questions could potentially, we as lawyers, we try to ask, specific yet general questions because we want to be as inclusive as possible. But I never thought about it from the perspective of the negative consequences of what this might do to reinforce a stigma that I didn't know existed because I wasn't a licensed healthcare professional. So when you ask questions about, have you ever gone to therapy in your life, or, and you realize the fact that the most common chronic condition in the world is depression. What you're doing is you're sending and reinforcing a message to healthcare professionals that there might be some negative consequence, real or perceived, if you do something about that depression. And you worked your entire life putting others first to get to this point in your career. You've amassed hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. You have all this pressure and stress. And this is just one more reason why you shouldn't take care of yourself when you need to. And it's a valid reason. If you, why would you risk all of that for what might be a short, bout of mental health illness? What I would say on the other side of that is that's exactly what my sister-in-law thought. She had a very short bout of mental illness associated with COVID and the overwhelming experience that she had in the emergency room. And she was so concerned about it, she didn't do anything about it until a point that of no return, if you will. And now she's not here anymore. So these things can happen so quickly. So it's this law of unintended consequences, if you will. But as Tim said, what we've done at the Lorna Breen Foundation by creating a very simple toolkit for organizations to follow, and more importantly, a simple mechanism to communicate to the workforce where it's okay and where it's not okay, putting ourselves in their shoes for a minute, what it's doing is it's helping to knock down that institutionalized barrier to help seeking. And hopefully those healthcare professionals can take better care of themselves and do the best job they can taking care of patients, which is what they're in the business of doing.
Yeah. And just to follow up on that, I think what Corey just said is a key point, because that's how I found out about this was, I don't think anybody intentionally is saying, hey, let's put questions in these applications that are going to contribute to someone's mental health decline. Or I don't think the intent is there, but I didn't know. I didn't know what questions were on the application as a leader or a hospital administrator. A lot of times people just don't know that that's causing the issues that it is. So it's something that Corey and I talk, and we don't run into many people who say, hey, we don't believe in what you're doing. Most people believe in it. They aren't aware, or they're not putting the pieces of the puzzle together to understand that by asking those questions, it could lead to someone being afraid or concerned if they raise their hand and say they need help.
Corey, where do the state boards of medicine stand on reporting requirements related to mental health and treatment of their licensed providers?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. We have a very strong partnership with the Federation of State Medical Boards. We have growing partnerships with the other licensing board federations for pharmacy, for dental, for nursing. And as you probably know, and maybe your listeners are also aware, sometimes the boards have the ability just unilaterally through their own internal mechanism to change these questions. Sometimes you have to go through a legislative approach, or sometimes it's nice to do a legislative approach like we did in Virginia a couple years ago. And we got all the boards, if you will, and benefited 500,000 licensees in 62 different types of health professions. I would say that we have made incredible progress with this badge program. We now have, between the hospitals we credential and the licensing boards, about 1.2 million health workers in the United States currently working in an institution or being licensed by a board that has our badge.
Tremendous.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. When we started the work, we had about 17 medical licensing boards that we had given the badge to. Now we're at about 30. Our goal this year with the FSMB is to get to 100% on the test. They want to be the first out of the gate, because now all these other licensing boards are going, hold on, we want the badge too, and we're going to beat you to it. So it's great to see the engagement. I'll echo something that Tim said in this answer, which is, when we worked with a bipartisan, multidisciplinary coalition in Virginia, the Medical Society, Nursing Association, Pharmacy Association, Healthcare Association, to get a new law passed in Virginia, which said that if you're a licensing board, you can only ask basically two questions, and they're about current impairment, which is the, I know, talking to a lawyer, so you want to know what's the appropriate question. It's current impairment, not about a past. That when I testified in favor of that legislation, the chair of the committee looked across the dais after I spoke to his colleagues, and he said, "Would anyone here dare speak against this legislation?" And it passed unanimously in a bipartisan way. And it worked with an emergency activation clause. And so as soon as the governor signed it, it became law, as opposed to having to wait another 45 days. It was that important. And so we're making incredible progress at the licensing board level. Some of the fastest process, though, I'll just say, is the credentialing level. This time last year, we had 75 hospitals that we had given the badge to. As I sit here today, we are hovering at close to 500 hospitals in the country that we've given the badge to. That's over a 400% increase, so much so that we're now publishing maps of hospitals, licensing boards, et cetera. Every quarter now, we're having to update them on our website at drlornabreen.org, because as soon as we publish them, they're out of date. That's how quick this progress is, which is so wonderful to see. And it's so important, because as Tim said, a lot of times when you educate them about the unintended consequences of these questions, and you point out to them as an example that the Department of Justice has said, when you ask these questions, it's a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act, it perks them up pretty quickly to say, oh, there's a relatively straightforward solution that can take me about 48 hours to implement. And I could do it at low, you know, almost no cost to my organization. How do I sign up for that? And so it's moved quite quickly. And we'll be hopeful to celebrate the 100% of the medical licensing boards. And then as we're doing it through nursing and pharmacy and dental and all the other licensing boards, we want to keep giving this badge away so that the workforce can simply get the same care that I could get without worrying about my legal license being put in jeopardy.
Tim, what immediate actions can organizations take to prioritize mental health and well-being of their healthcare workforce?
Well, I think there's two different tracks to the question that you just answered. There's the check the box approach, where you can go through and do everything that Corey's Foundation will help you do. And then you can say you did it, or you can go through and get the badge and really dig into the problem. And we're still, you know, we're still learning ourselves as we're a year into this partnership. So I think we have to be careful as administrators or leaders sometimes that you want to get the badge. Like, what is really the problem we're trying to solve? And getting the badge is one step in doing that. So I think, you know, there's the check the box approach, and then there's really being part of the solution and partnering with Corey and his team to do that.
As our time together draws to a close, I'm sure that some people listening to this podcast would like to reach out to one or the other or both of you. First, Corey, how may people reach you and learn more about the All In Wellbeing First for Healthcare Coalition?
Well, they can reach out to me directly on my email at corey@drbreenheroes.org. That's C-O-R-E-Y at drbreenheroes.org. Don't worry, I'll give Tim's cell number out to the listeners in a minute. They can also go to our website at drlornabreen.org to find out more about our work, as well as our All In Wellbeing First for Healthcare Coalition. And I think that's the great starting point. I'll also say, you know, from a grassroots perspective, we now have almost 200 volunteer ambassadors to our organization, and we haven't even advertised the program yet. On our website, if anybody's interested in becoming more personally involved in this work and helping to carry this work out, they can become an ambassador to our foundation. So all that information is at drlornabreen.org, as well as information on our current maps and the like. So look forward to hearing from your listeners and engaging with them so that they can do this, help us do this work together.
Tim, how may people reach you and learn more about Jackson and Coker and how your organization supports well-being of healthcare providers?
Yeah, I would say that they're going to get a lot more by going to drlornabreen.org than they are contacting me. And I mean that seriously, because there's so much there. And the foundation has done a great job at laying out their website on how you can get involved at whatever levels you want to. So that's definitely where people should go. if they want to contact me on, you know, the partnership and the value that we see in partnering with Corey and his team, best way is probably just email tfischer, F-I-S-C-H-E-R, at jacksonandcoker.com.
My guests have been Corey Feist of the Dr. Lorna Breen Foundation and Tim Fischer of Jackson Coker. Gentlemen, thank you for being on Sound Practice. And more importantly, thank you for the great work of supporting the well-being and mental health of our healthcare workforce. It's such a tremendous service that you're doing, not only to the healthcare workers, but really to the whole country. So thank you very much. Well done, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us, and thanks for helping us advance this work.
My thanks to Tim Fischer of Jackson Coker and Corey Feist of the Dr. Lorna Breen Foundation. Practicing medicine is challenging, and the profession needs associated allies. Demonstrating leadership at its finest, Tim Fischer and Corey Feist deserve our thanks. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpracticepodcast.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpracticepodcast.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org.
That is holy cow. Batman and Robin. Ritual Kapow.